This is a HeadGum Original.
When I first listened to it on the bus, I heard it on the bus. That's why it's a bus song to me. And you know, you got the bus speakers, crackly audio. It's terrible. It's echoed multiple times, man, because it's like multiple speakers along the whole bus. You're getting this weird big metal box feel to it. I didn't even know what it meant at first. You know, when I first heard
it. I got to hear about what a bus song is when we get started, because we did not have bus songs. We did not ride the school bus because we walked to school our entire school career.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And so I didn't have this. It also sounds like you had a nicer bus. Our bus did not have speakers.
I mean, nice bus. I don't know if you would call it a nice bus. I don't think any bus is nice when it comes to a school bus.
I mean, to be clear, we're talking about a conventional school bus, the yellow bus,
the Bluebird,
leather seats. Mm-hmm. Yep. A crusty old crone driving, yelling at you.
We got to save this for the podcast.
The podcast.
Sorry, I interrupted the cold open, guys. I screwed that up bad. We had such a good cold open going.
Oh, the school bus.
And I put my foot in the mouth.
The thing about a cold open is it's designed to be interrupted, right? You got to get back to the meat of the matter at some point.
That's exactly right. Andrew, you're dealing with a pro here, man. And the best part is, the audience is now going to hear us yelling at you about the cold open. That's going to make it really good.
You're right. You only do the cold open to introduce a little mystery into the podcast, so everyone is sort of like, what exactly are they talking about? And then, out of nowhere, the theme song for the podcast hits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically with Distractable.
Oh!
That's happening!
They did it! They did it!
Let's punch it.
Punch up the jam. Punch it up.
It's another week of Punch Up the Jam, and this week we are here with Markiplier, and I think he just picked one of the funniest possible songs we could be doing, with Arms Wide Open by Creed.
This, of course, is Punch Up the Jam, the show in which we take the greatest hits in history and we make them greater. This is one of the greatest hits.
Is it one of the greatest hits?
If you just look at chart position, this is a U.S. Billboard number one song.
Okay, it's a greatest hit.
By definition.
Uh-huh.
Mark, welcome to the show, man.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Why is this one of your greatest hits, Mark?
One of my greatest hits.
We're talking absolute value, I think, for you. Absolute value in terms of, like, distance from the number zero.
Right. Okay, so for everyone listening at home, for clarity, my prompt was, what's a song that haunts your dreams? What's a song that really, like, yeah, you hate it, but you know it so well? And it's not that I hate this song. It's the context in which I was exposed to this song, which I think we talked about in the cold open, and if it's left in there, it'll be there. But if not...
Give it to us straight. How old are you, and what is the scenario in which you're being fed this song?
When I was a young boy, standing alone at the bus stop waiting for the bus to come pick me up, you know, that's a miserable experience for any kid, especially when you're not at a bus stop with people you know, or if you're at a bus stop alone, which I think I was at the time. And it was just me sitting at the end of the cul-de-sac being like, why do I have to get up so early? Developing children need sleep, and this is completely counterproductive to a young mind.
This doesn't match up with my circadian rhythms at all.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so I get on the bus. I go to the back, wherever, because I think in this particular bus, the engine was at the back. Some of them at the front, but like some at the back. And I sit in the way in the back with my legs up on the engine hump, you know, just like feeling the rumble of
that's
that.
That's the most desirable seat. You want to get the back seat of the bus, the furthest away from authority, and you have a nice footrest.
Yeah, well, nice as in my knees were at my chin and my bag didn't go anywhere, but whatever. So we drive along, and this bus had radios on it. So radios, speakers, all along the bus. They're about, 20 feet? I don't know, something like that. And every odd spacing, there was a speaker. I think there were six in total. And suddenly this song comes on, with arm wide open, or wherever it came in when I walked on the bus. And I had no idea what he was talking about. But at first, you know, it was like, I couldn't understand a word he was saying, but I was like, And so it was fine. But that song played for like a year. I swear the whole school year, I would get up and I would get on the bus because you always get on the bus at the same relative time. And that song would be playing. And I don't know if it was just the radio broadcast that was doing it always at the same time, going through the same list every single day. But I heard that song in the morning on the drive over every single day.
So can we be sure, or do we know if this was the bus driver's personal collection, a CD that they're spinning so that right when they get to your stop, it's at the same track on the CD? Or is this FM radio?
I was not the type of person to befriend the bus driver, so pondering other life problems than was this the bus driver's doing.
Sure. At the role of the bus driver is not to be your friend. It is your role in life to be arch enemies with the school bus driver if you're a backseat riding kid.
It had to just be like an FM clear channel playlist, right? That's just keeping a tight fist on the FM rotation. And it's just like, we have 12 songs we're going to play in the drive time 8 to 9 hour.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of them we're going to spin up twice.
Yeah, if this is a number one song, it's getting 29 spins a day for sure.
Is that what it is? They play those that many times?
I made up that number, but it felt right. It felt truthy. Yeah.
You have all the musical 29. Authority I could ever like imagine in this world. You're the bus driver in this scenario. I just trust that you know what you're doing, and I get on the bus and I'm exposed to it. That's this bus is this podcast now.
Now, I have to imagine that bus speakers are not conducive to understanding the lyrics to the song.
Mm-hmm.
That bus speakers are just good for like the vibe of the song. You kind of get the.
Yeah, schools can't even afford pencils. I don't think they're going to splurge on a speaker system on a bus. It was probably
luxurious.
A wonder that it even had speakers.
Yeah, that sounds pretty amazing. Like, is this for bus drivers' announcements, or it's just for the entertainment of the children?
Yeah, during our now legendary cold open, you were talking about how your bus had speakers, and that was mind-boggling to me. Our buses ain't have any speakers in there. It was just... Just the engine.
Just one of those things, you know, you take it for granted. And my childhood was just so beautiful for having those speakers. It really enriched my experience as a kid.
Okay, well, you paint a great picture here. You have this song committed to memory, not because you loved it and owned the album yourself, but because you're forced to listen to it by routine at a time of the day that you already hate. You already feel horrible. You're going to school. You're at one of the worst parts of your day. You're still half asleep. And this song is being drilled into your ear in a bad sounding way. Mm-hmm. It's coming out of tinny speakers rattling around a metal can of a bus. Mm-hmm. You probably can't hear a thing. And the singer of this song is purposefully, what can we say about the way the vocals work in this song?
I'll just say emotionally, the feeling you have at 7:45, 8:15 a.m. As like a school child getting on a bus is basically the opposite of feeling like your arms are wide open. I'm imagining little Markiplier doing the opposite and wrapping his arms around his backpack, clutching it tight. But I'm also imagining that you have the exact same voice, which is pretty cute and funny.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I believe 11 years old this would be. I had the same voice. But you got to remember, I'm sitting on top of the bus's engine as well. So in addition to, I'm getting like underneath my ass. So I don't really hear much. It wasn't until like a month in that I actually started to hear the lyrics and understand that, okay, it's a father welcoming their child into this world. And I remember the connection because it was like, we created life. And I'm like, oh, I had a sex ed I know where babies come from now. I think it all kind of coincided at that one moment.
You learned about how babies were made from this song?
I will go on the record and say that is true. 100% factual.
Yeah. I will say Creed, for me, growing up in the South, you kind of have a spine tingler, a radio spine tingler, where you'll be skipping from radio station to radio station, and just within 2 seconds, you can know, is this a Christian radio rock station or not? Mm-hmm. You'll hear a new song, you've only heard 2 seconds of it, and you just immediately know, like, well, get past the station. This is a Christian rock song.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife, growing up in New Jersey,
she
doesn't
radio.
Have that spine tingler. We were in Montana last summer together.
It's like a Spidey sense?
Yes, it's a Spidey sense. She would, like, skip to a station and be like, oh, what's this song? This is good. I've never heard this before. And I'd be like, you know, there's not even a lyric yet. And I'm like, 100%, oh, yeah. This is going to be Christian rock. And but Creed has always kind of been in this gray area where I could never tell. Like, wait, am I listening to Christian rock or not? And like all those lyrics in the song, like I created life. It's just like very like, wait, is this a abortion protest song? Like, are they selling out arenas because like youth groups are buying tickets? I could never tell with Creed.
Mm-hmm, that's how they get you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how they rope you in.
Yeah. It's just such a wide demographic that they can appeal to, I think. I don't know. I've never listened to another Creed song. Maybe I have. I would never know.
I think you probably have, and you just don't know it. You know, it's they had a bunch of other. Here's one. Have you heard this? Can you take me higher?
Oh, that's Creed.
Pretty sure that's them. Yeah.
Yeah. Anytime you hear a song with a guy whose voice sounds like roar, 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 it's
yeah.
Creed.
Did he do the Spider-Man hero? Not gonna. Is that Creed?
Feel like that might be Nickelback.
Right after those words came out of my mouth, I knew it was false. That not every song you hear with a guy going is a Creed song, because Nickelback exists in this world too.
Yeah,
they're the Canadian. Right. Are Nickelback the Canadian Creed, or is Creed the Floridian Nickelback?
Well, I think both of those vocals, the vocal styles of those two gentlemen, Chad Kroeger and Scott Stapp, both reflect the long tail of the influence of Eddie Vedder.
Yeah, Eddie Vedder and...
Like, to my ear, Eddie Vedder is the guy in the 90s, singer of Pearl Jam, that pioneered the singing like this.
Can't find a better man.
Other like grungy rock bands were doing a little tinge of that. Even like Green Day is distorting their voice in a punk way. And Eddie Vedder took it this way. What do you call this? When you do this to your voice. And people were just like, man, that's the way he squished his vocals as sort of like a manly Muppet. That really freaking rocks,
I'm making
man.
The weirdest faces right now because I'm thinking about what I do when I try to do a Scott Stapp or Eddie Vedder impression, and it's just making the inside of my mouth as round as possible. It's just like, You just say everything with an O at the front of your mouth. Like all of your E's, U's, I's are just like, E-O-E-I-E.
Okay, so try this at home. Shape your mouth into an O. I'm kind of doing a heart shape of my mouth, and then... Let's try to say, like, if my mouth's in a heart shape, 4 score and 7 years ago.
Yeah, that's what Scott Stapp.
4 score and 7 years ago.
That is what Scott Stapp sounded like when he delivered the Gettysburg Address.
Hello,
yes.
My baby. Hello, my honey. Hello, my ragtime gal.
Now,
that was kind of similar.
I found out a frightening fact about Scott Stapp recently, there is a Reagan biopic that's about to come out. I think it might be like a conservative-backed Reagan biopic, because like Dennis Quaid is going to be in it, John Voight is going to be in it, and they cast Scott Stapp to play a famous singer, and I'm dying to hear Scott Stapp perform some of the singer songs. Scott Stapp is going to be a supporting character, Frank Sinatra.
Scott Stapp is playing
Frank
Sinatra?
I did it my way. Start spreading the news.
I find this so fascinating because, like, I know so little about the music world and music history, so these names are going right over my head. I'm just impressed at how much.
Have you heard of a guy called Frank Sinatra?
Of course, yeah.
Okay,
yeah, I think that's
we'll start there.
Enough.
Now let's play like Andrew. Let's play like our audience is in Markiplier's shoes here, and perhaps they don't know much about this song they're about to talk about, even though it's exceedingly famous. It is from 20 years ago. Yes. What do they need to know before we embark on our listening tour?
What I found, I mean, is in the first line of the song. It's about Scott Stapp finding out that his wife is pregnant.
And he's going to be
realizing
a dad.
His life is going to change.
Extremely
he's
sentimental.
Dad.
Okay.
And he has said, usually this is not a good sign for me about whether I'm going to like a song. There are a couple exceptions. He said he wrote the song in 15 minutes. His wife called him. She was like, I'm pregnant. His guitar player was playing during the sound check, and he ran over and was like, hey, that little riff you're playing, keep playing it. And he wrote the lyrics right there in 15 minutes during the sound check, and the rest was history.
I got to say, we've only been hosting this podcast about 20 weeks now. Okay. And I'll say, empirically, it's been proven out that if in the history of the song you find out that somebody did it in one night or wrote it in 15 minutes,
yes,
that's a surefire recipe that you're going to end up on this podcast. That, oh, Akon and David Guetta recorded Sexy Bitch in one night? Maybe they should have taken two nights.
Another thing I did not realize about Creed was just the speed they went from, like, a college dorm band to a chart-crushing rock band. They got, like, a small-time manager in Florida who printed, like, a couple thousand copies of their album. And somehow one of those albums made it into the hands of a record executive that, like, flew to Florida, signed them, and within, like, a year of, like, a guy in Florida being like, let's make 5,000 copies of a CD. Mm-hmm. Within, like, a year of that, that same album is being re-released nationwide and going platinum. And it's just, like, it's two or three years after that that this album is coming out. Human Clay, which I will say another, like, major red flag for me. Anytime you have the word clay in any rock context, you have to think, is this a Christian band?
Yeah, I know, right?
I don't know why.
At this point, that's more than a red flag, man. That's a direct signpost. They're making it as clear as they can.
I think that, like, with that success, what I will say, I don't know a lot about, like, the technicality of their rise or their music in general. I don't even know what key they play. I don't know. I have no idea. But what I do think I understand about it is, like, that song, as much as I don't like it, as much as, like, I don't get it, and it haunts my dreams, it does convey a feeling. Whether or not that feeling resonates in, like, a, ooh, children, oh, fatherhood or motherhood, whatever, or you're with your spider sense of, like, oh, it's a Christian rock, I need to run away as fast as I can. Like, it conveys a feeling. And in any artistic medium, when you can convey a feeling that is easily understood by a large group, whether or not that's the Christian rock group or those types of people or people whose entire identity is their ability to be a parent. And I'm not that they say they're all that. I'm not saying that. Some people are that. I'm not saying that. But when you get an easily understandable feeling, it can, like, translate really quickly, because then you don't have to, like, use complicated things like words. And, you know, you can just, like, get this feeling. So I do understand why that would share. And that's a similar thing I might say about Nickelback, but then again, I know even less. So.
Yeah, I just can't help but tie the idea that they had this meteoric rise from, like, 96, 97 to, like, when this album came out in 2000 to the idea that Scott Stapp would be like, no need to revise this. I wrote it in 15 minutes. It works as is. Like, and the feedback loop pays off for him. This is, like, an enormous hit. Like, why ever revise a song?
Anytime I hear something like that, I call bullshit immediately. There's no way that song, anything, all that shit was ever written in 15 minutes one night. He might have had the idea in 15 minutes and been like, I decide that riff is going to go. And then they got to go in the booth and still record it. And that's going to take longer than 15 minutes just to transfer some files, isn't it? Like, just plugging in an instrument is going to take longer than 15. Like, you did not. You may have written some words, but there's no way. No one does anything in 15
minutes.
Yeah,
he snuck in the second verse while they were uploading about 4 gigabytes of guitar takes, know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And given that even on my show that I just did, I wrote scenes literally right before we filmed them. Took me longer than 15 minutes. I don't say I filmed that video in 15 minutes or any shit like that. In all the world of having everything around you to do exactly what you needed to do, which I did have, still took me longer than 15 minutes. Bullshit.
You know what took 15 minutes? Hmm? Fathering the child.
Making that baby.
Yeah.
The mom definitely disagrees that it took 15 minutes, though. Let me tell you. She's on Mark's team. She's like, it took 40 weeks.
Do you think that the mom just gave birth and, you know, is just in the hospital bed, just completely exhausted, and he's like, I created life. And
he's
then
like,
mom's
in 15 minutes.
Do anything.
Now, what I 100% believe when you hear the opening guitar riff in the song is that this is a guitar riff that a 20-year-old guy plays every night at soundcheck. This is the thing that a guy's just like, soundchecking, gonna pull out my coolest riff that's not in a song yet.
Here it is.
That kind of sounds like something you'd learn in a guitar lesson, and that Scott Stapp, unfortunately, just, like, memorialized it as the beginning of this enormous
hit. I'm going to lay it on you.
Okay.
The heartbeat is the baby.
Whoa.
I guess that.
The finger ons and the finger offs on the guitar is so like.
Well, I
just
heard.
You're not gonna hate on the hammer ons.
The news today. It seems my life is gonna change. I'll close my eyes, begin to pray, then tears of joy stream down my face.
Ooh, okay, I'm gonna pause it there. It's
Creed,
beautiful. He just saw the pregnancy test.
In the late 90s, Creed is like literally putting up statements on their website being like, we are not a Christian band, guys. As like youth groups are flocking to the arenas, it's like, man, in the first verse, you're saying you're getting down on your knees and praying. Like,
that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with it.
He never said praying to God.
Well, that's a great point.
Could have been Satan. Who knows?
I think
it's their assumption. It's those youth groups that we're assuming. And then when the big old devil horns start to rise up in the back and a big icon of the devil appears behind them, and it's their fault.
And Creed's position would be like, yeah, we're all religious, but we're not saying, hey, do Jesus stuff.
That is
in
their
the
exact
song.
Position. Their exact position okay. is like, sure, we're Christians and we use some Christian imagery in our songs, but we're not trying to make anyone else Christian, so we're not a Christian band. It's like, what's the line you have to cross in Creed's mind to get there? Like, I began to pray and you should too, with arms wide open.
I mean, isn't that what Christian rock bands do? Is like, now everyone drop and pray to God right now.
That's exactly it. God would have to be a character in the song. You would have to get to the chorus, then it'll be like, God's arms are wide open for you. Come on.
Walk down the aisle, we got a guy up here to baptize you.
Yeah, but if it's Scott Stapp's arms that are wide open, then we're in a much bigger market for this record.
Yeah, because he's a hottie.
Yeah, Scott Stapp, you could cut glass with that chin. Man, this guy is a dreamboat.
Yeah, he's got that that perfectly same-length brown hair tucked behind his ears.
And if you think that doesn't have anything to do with them being a really popular band, well, then I got some Katy Perry records to sell you.
Man, I gotta look up some pictures of him in the era, because right now I'm not seeing it as much.
Are you Googling pictures of Scott Stapp current?
Yeah, absolutely. I got him when I think in Creed's heyday. I'm getting Nicolas Cage vibes, which, don't get me wrong, Nicolas Cage.
So extremely handsome.
Except much better hair. Much better hair than Nicolas Cage.
This is like a Walmart version of Nicolas Cage. Yeah. That's what
I mean, if you're looking at him in the year 2000, Google Scott Stapp 2000, the year this came out, he's got those marshmallow pillow lips that I just want to go to sleep on.
I don't see it, but I believe that you do.
Now, just real quick, while you're already Googling Creed imagery, Mark, I want you to look up what I now consider to be maybe the worst album cover I've ever seen.
Oh, no.
Which is the album cover, Human Clay. This is not a visual medium, so describe to our listeners.
Is this the album that we're talking about?
This is the album we're talking about. Describe to our listeners the album cover of Human Clay, because I could not believe my eyes when I saw it.
Yeah. Okay, all right. So the first sentence I want to say is baby's first Photoshop. The second sentence I want to say is it looks like a shitty 3D model of a textureless male figure bursting out of the ground, but his abdomen is transparent as if they didn't crop him out properly.
Cool.
And he's bursting through these rocks or something that someone clearly just plopped in the middle of this crossroads.
Yeah.
Again,
crossroads.
It gives you that little bit of
man bursting from grave.
Rising from the dead. Mm-hmm. And he's extending his hand towards the heavens.
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
And he's got a pocket watch in his hands. And he looks in pain.
Because you only have so much time, man. It's pretty deep.
So you're saying he's a Satanist.
It looks like a screenshot from a 1992 special effect. Like, it doesn't even look as good as a Photoshop. It looks like this is in a movie for a split second in 1992, like a movie that's trying to rip off Terminator 2. Mm-hmm. And someone was like, this is a pretty cool moment in the movie. Let's make that 1992 special effect our album cover.
Yeah, it's not good. Also, what field are they in? It's just some, it's some random ass field, which I get it. Like the salt of the earth, whatever.
It kind of looks like this guy's a bad guy in a 1999 video game who, like, is going to come back and kill you with his powerful stopwatch.
I see what you mean. I'm now finally looking at it. It's like a man of metal who's sort of, he's reflecting his surroundings. He's bursting out of a dirt road.
Baby's first Photoshop. Look at the spread on that drop shadow. Ooh.
I was just about to say, everything else I can forgive. The drop shadows on all of the elements, Creed itself, human clay, and the figure in the background are unforgivable.
Yeah, they just grabbed the slider on the on the spread drop shadow and just dragged it all the way to the right. Never do that.
No,
I don't even think they did that. I think they created another layer, multiply brush, and just went,
not the multiply.
Good
brush.
Enough.
To be sure, the typography is horrific, guys. Yeah. But I have to tell you, this is not Punch Up the font.
Okay, you're right. I won't make all the jokes I was about to make about how the last step was posterized.
I don't know a lot about album cover and the whole world behind that and vinyls and all that, but I would say that album covers definitely fall in the category of relating to the song in some way, shape, or form, or whatever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you're an expert, one of the world's premier experts at YouTube thumbnails. Mm-hmm. You know what?
I would say I'm pretty good, yes.
Yeah, so let's say if this album cover were a YouTube thumbnail because you want people to click on it and watch your music video, what pointers maybe could we give them?
All right, lose the human clay, it's too small to read. Increase the size of the guy reaching out. Angle it so his hand's reaching towards camera. Mm. Increase size of head.
Inviting you
increase
in.
Contrast. Put a dildo in his hand instead of a pocket watch.
Ooh. Yep.
Color's
got
to pop.
If he's got something in his hand, it's got to be clear what it is. And what would you what would you title this as a YouTube thumbnail? Like, man bursts out of crossroad?
I buried myself alive for 48 hours.
there you go.
Oh, that'll nail it. I was thinking, I'm going to be a dad?
Nah, everyone's done that one.
What if
I'm not infertile is a better title.
That is good. What if it was paternity test?
Put the paternity test in the ghost's hand, yeah.
It takes two steps for someone to think that way, though.
You want to imply juicy gossip.
Grab Maury's face from the You Are Not the Father meme and just put it over to the side in the thumbnail.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This could be a new show.
Someone
segment.
Listening to this, please punch that up. Every note we just gave.
If you're a Photoshop savvy fan, we request your punch ups of this album cover. If you send it to us, you're getting a big fat RT, my friends.
That big ringing guitar chord.
I don't know. I am picturing this anew, imagining you on the school bus. This song is so sentimental and, I don't know, treacly, but just imagining playing it to a bunch of elementary school or middle school kids every morning is really funny
to
me.
Why would a child care about this song? No reason to care about it.
They wouldn't.
I guess the other thing is, I am a dad of three kids, and I have spent lots of, like, extremely sentimental time rocking newborns to sleep, like singing to them. So I will not judge anyone that wants to just experience emotion and just feel their feelings about being a dad. It's amazing. But just imagining someone singing to a newborn with this voice is so crazy to me. Twinkle, twinkle, little star.
Also, what's cute about singing to kids and what's like to me is really emotional listening to kids, the kids I have the most experiencing to are your kids, Evan. You don't sing this like big freighted emotional song to them. You sing like Baby Beluga, and you're just singing to the kid about a little whale, and that's what really takes you into this emotional moment. Is you got this tiny little baby, and the baby's just learning about a whale. That's cute. The baby doesn't know about having its arms wide open to the getting down on its knees and praying. Now, musically,
that's a good point. Yeah,
there's so much coming back from the '90s, but there's something in this song that has not come back recently, and that I'm the most terrified will come back as like a cyclical fashion moment in music.
Wait, so what do you think has come back?
I think like kind of like grunge has come back, sort of. And I think so many younger musicians like Billie Eilish have really embraced the 90s and tried to bring back a lot of 90s vibes into music.
Yeah, yeah. And there's even some fashion and aesthetic coming out from the 90s. Sure.
But one thing that has not come back is the flanged guitar.
Ooh.
It's the most hated sound for me of the 90s. I'm so glad it hasn't come back, but I'm terrified it's going to come back. But I think there is a punched up version of this song where you just unflanged the guitar and sang the song in a normal voice.
Wow.
With arms wide open.
If you just sang it like...
with arms wide open.
Or what if Frank Sinatra sang this song? With arms wide open, fly me to...
What is the difference between a flanged guitar and the one they use in SpongeBob?
Mm.
The thing, what is it called? The steel something guitar.
Oh, the lap steel?
Yeah. Yes.
Does it have a name like flange?
No, it's, you know, in SpongeBob, they use it in all the song. And they had it in Ed, Edd n Eddy, where Ed, Double D, my apologies, played it really well on that one episode where they were on the boat on the river and they were giving river tours. Do you remember? Mm-hmm. And he was really good and everyone was stunned and nobody else talked while he was playing because he was just that good, but he was super bored about him being that good and he just kind of like sunk into his chair as he was playing. Does anybody know what I'm talking about?
It's like a lap steel or like a pedal steel guitar. So a pedal steel guitar is a different instrument.
Yeah.
A flanged guitar is like an effect you're playing on you're putting on your guitar that's like, I don't know, how do you describe what a flange is, Evan?
I mean, do you think, and this is me speaking from ignorance, do you think the whole concept of like the garage band where it's like guitar, bass, singer, drum is never going to come back? Because isn't that like what you're talking about would only come back if there were artists coming up that were of that particular style?
Right.
But most of the artists that I see these days anyway that get into like popular stuff are just singers with electronic music across the board.
Yeah, just doing the bleeps and the bloops and the creeps.
Right, 20 years ago, Billie Eilish and Finneas would have been in a garage band before they could just do bedroom pop in their bedroom.
To Mark's question, here is a pedal steel guitar. And that, of course, is its own separate instrument. Here is a flange pedal on an electric guitar.
Oh, it just makes my skin crawl. They're kind of like doubling.
You hear that? What is an adjective? It's kind of phasing.
Yeah.
Sounds a little spacey.
It's making a little sci-fi. Yeah.
What it probably does in a technical term, what I imagine, is it takes the sound signal and it applies a sinusoidal signal across as it moves, so that it smooths it out and extends certain sounds.
Ooh, daddy, hurt
Professor Markiplier.
Sinusoidal.
Well, I'm wondering, there's kind of a sci-fi.
People know sinusoidal.
Ooh, I love it.
Co-sinusoidal.
Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering, there's kind of a sci-fi thing to the flanging guitar. It makes me wonder, does Creed think that Jesus lives in space?
Hmm. Well, he does sort of,
I mean, where would heaven be otherwise, idiot?
Yeah.
You fool!
Yeah, I think of heaven as sort of like parallel universe, but you know, but physically does feel kind of spacey, you know, up there in the clouds.
That's why you hit the flange pedal.
Yeah, that's why you hit the flange. You want to hear more of it?
I use that all the time, but for voice effects, so I am actually quite familiar with that particular
effect. That is pretty, that's pretty deep, guys.
All we are is dust in the wind, dude.
We're back to another verse here.
If I'm ready,
I don't know if I'm ready
to be the man. I have to be. I'll take her man.
Okay.
I'll take her by my side.
The guitar is really flanged.
We're standing on. We created life. We're arms wide open.
Woo!
I mean, the guitar is so flanged, it sounds like it's, like, underneath water in space. I swear that I have pet peeves with songs other than bad rhymes, but rhyming B with ready is a stinker, man.
He wrote it in 15 minutes.
He wrote it in 15 minutes.
15 minutes. Give him a break.
Wait, what are you saying? I don't. What is the line? I don't know if I'm ready to be the man I have to be.
You're just putting the emphasis on the wrong syllable. I've heard worse as well. But it's a that's the sort of rhyme. You just wonder, what if you'd spend a 16th minute on this?
Well, there was no time. He was about to be a father. He didn't know if he was going to be the man he needed to be.
So we just finally got to the chorus, where like really opens up. The guitars go chugga chugga. You have some big fat power chords chugging away with arms wide open. Gotta say, you know, if you're into that grungy Eddie Vedder thing, he's killing the game.
Yes.
He's nailing this extremely specific style.
The person that rushed from New York City to Florida to sign them was like, I heard their CD, and I knew they were the next arena rock act. And they weren't wrong. This is rock music that should be played in an arena.
I did find a clip of comparing Eddie Vedder's voice with Scott Stapp. Now that we've heard Scott Stapp sing a bit,
okay,
we're going to listen to Eddie Vedder, the lead singer of Pearl Jam. Tell me what you think.
After listening to Scott Stapp sing for the last 3 minutes, Eddie Vedder sounds absolutely normal to me, and it's shocking. It's like Scott Stapp is doing a parody of Eddie Vedder. Because Eddie Vedder is just like, oh, this is a normal guy singing, right? Yeah. Where I think of him as being so stylized.
He took it further. And then jumping ahead. Yeah. You're right, he took it further. Scott Stapp has he's out-vettered Eddie Vedder.
To me, listening to that, I would believe that the Pearl, Eddie Vedder?
Of Pearl Jam?
Eddie talks like that. Mm. I would believe that. I've never heard him talk, maybe I have, but in an interview. Mm-hmm. I would believe he talks in a similar way that he sang, because of the way that he kind of like musically treats the words and like picks the way like it goes through versus the other guy.
There's no way that Scott Stapp opens his mouth as a speaker and is like, hey, how's it going? Oh, I'm so thank you for sitting down with me for this interview.
Not just in like the tone. Okay, tone like of singing, like in terms of like how you project sound, stuff like that. But I believe in like, like he kind of like has probably that energy when he speaks, and that's more natural to him. Whereas like, oh, the other Creed guy probably only sings that way, and he doesn't have nearly as much of the actual nuance of manipulating the words.
What is hilarious to me is that I read an interview with Scott Stapp where he basically acknowledged how much his voice has been mocked. Like, yeah, like I had to live through all the impressions, but it changed me as a singer. Like I listened to the feedback and like I don't sing like that anymore. So I was just curious.
Really?
Was,
so he felt criticized.
He felt criticized. He heard the impressions. We're doors wide open. And he was like, I've changed as a singer. I don't sing like that anymore. So I was like, okay, I'm going to look it up on YouTube. I pulled them singing With Arms Wide Open in 2009. This is almost 10 years after it came after.
Okay, so this is 10 years later.
10 years later.
He's performing
after he's heard the criticism, after he's changed his singing voice.
Let's see how he does it differently. What his real voice is like.
Yeah. It's exactly the same. Now, I will say the guitar is unflanged. So, at least his guitar learned to unflange his guitar. That's just a nice, crunchy guitar.
That's the one piece they brought into the 21st century.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to listen back to this chorus, and, you know, this is the peak of the song. So, I'd like to get Mark's thoughts on, you know, maybe begin to discuss what we could do to punch up this song. Falling action here.
Woo!
Okay, we had the main course. Now we got to chill out for a minute. You know, it's like, I think he just wanted to do something that was like, listen, dudes need to feel feelings when they become dads, but because of patriarchy, we can't have a nice, sensitive song. we have to do like some really hard rocking guitars for dads to vibe out. It's got to rock. And that's why we're going to do this arena rock number and sneak it in. We're going to sneak it, the message to all the dads out there.
But what if he could just be truly emotionally honest and vulnerable about his feelings? What if he'd gone full Raffy?
Full Raffy.
You know what I think, though, is like, I almost don't think he's trying to hide it at all. This is just the only language he speaks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the only language he knows is this, like, intensity. Because that's, when I hear the song, I'm taken right back to where I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, outside, actually, the city, in the small city, Milford. And every one of the people that I know from that school, like, kind of embodies the person that's singing this. And it's not that they don't think that they're being sensitive. It's like, that's the only outlet that he knows. And so when he wrote this in this way, it's like, of course it's powerful, because when you're a man and you've got to be tough and you can't connect with your feelings, like, it just all comes bursting out in terms of like this. So actually, like, having the crying in the beginning of the song is, I think he's being 100% open about the feelings of it. Not that this is the best way to do it, but it's the only way he knew how at the time.
I love it.
Like,
I definitely maybe it is the best way for him, man. Maybe it is the best way for him. This is his true feeling.
So he's trapped in the patriarchy, but what if he'd been able to burst out of the patriarchy almost as if he was, say, for example, a ghost holding a clock that had been buried under a crossroads?
It sounds just like that. you can't change the man, you know? Yeah. I'm not saying that this song is like the greatest version of this song, of this message, right? Because this song is just a message. Like, I'm going to be a father. Holy shit. That's what I hear when I hear this song. I'm scared, but I'm putting up a front, you know, of like, I'm going to show you love. And how many times have it's a hero fantasy, right? That's what men usually want to be, right? They want to be the hero. Mm-hmm. I've tons of imaginations where I'm facing down the hordes of hundreds, like, no matter the odds, I'll do whatever it takes. And it rarely lives up to that, even me, you know. Yeah, but it's just like, I could totally see it. It's there. It's like all there. I don't like the song, but I like the message, you know. Whatever you do to punch it up, it's got to still have that message.
Who's the true target of this song? Is the true target of this song really his child who's going to be born in, like, you know, 6, 7, 8 months? Or is the true target of the song, like, is he trying to impress his wife a little bit? Is he trying to be like, oh, I'm going to change, honey. I know that last year they tried to sell a sex tape of me and Kid Rock having an orgy, but I'm going to change.
Wait, is that real?
Yeah, that's real.
What?
What? Yes. Wait, yeah, no, all that glossed over me real quick. My brain is just back processing what you said.
Wait, how are we just getting into this after 30 minutes of talking about this song? What happened?
He had to sue. So a sex tape of him, Kid Rock, and four ladies wasn't released. So I feel like, are you really talking to your kid here, or are you like, your wife calls you and is like, I'm pregnant, and you're like, I need to call her back in 2 hours and sing her a song about how I'm going to change as a man and no longer have orgies with Kid Rock? That's once you get to 6 people, we've crossed the threshold into an orgy, right? That's no longer like a threesome is a threesome, a foursome is a foursome. But if you're there with Kid Rock and four ladies, that's full orgy, right?
If the number is greater than 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need a new
you
word
for that.
You
don't have a fivesome, you have an orgy.
Yeah, you need a new word for that. And if one of the people involved is Kid Rock, you may need a new word for that. It's a type of crime, I think.
Would you say that word is ba witta da ba da dangy dang diddy diddy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He did a ba witta ba da doop it up ramalama ding dong.
That 100% was going to be the name of the sex tape when they released it.
Yeah.
Audience for that sex tape, like the Pamela Anderson Tommy Lee sex tape that was like the famous sex tape of the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you understand who the audience for that sex tape is. Who is going to the store and being like, do you have the Kid Rock sex tape? I need it.
No.
For who it's for, and this is just like an honest opinion, I don't think it's for his wife so much, it's for himself. Like, he's trying to convince himself he's good enough to be a dad, so he's, like, saying all these things that he hopes is right. That's what I imagine.
100% agree.
You're so right.
100% agree. The audience for this song is himself. And that's true for every guy singing along. I think you're pumping yourself up to be like, I can do this, man. My life is going to change, and I'm up for the challenge.
It's all a charade, because then he's going out on stage every night and being like, I sing this song for my kids. I had to change the words. Like, he changed the pronouns when, like, different kids were born from like she to he to they. He's like, this is 100% a song about my kids. I'm not trying to change as a man. I'm not going to fight the entire band 311 in a hotel bar in the year 2004.
One of his kids.
What the fuck did this man do? Holy shit.
Oh, man. I mean, if there's one band you don't want to fight a whole version of, it's 311. You don't want to face off against 311.
Wait, are you telling another real story right now?
This is a real story that Scott Stapp just went to a bar and fought 311.
Another famous rock band.
Yeah.
And with rock band beef?
I think he was just being a dick. He was like throwing napkins at them and like smashing glasses. Just like classic, like you got famous as a rock star too fast stuff. And like you're trapped in like this 17-year-old mind, like getting drunk and being an asshole. And like 311 was like, they've done interviews where they're like, man, we moved all the way across the bar. We were just trying to ignore him. Like, you don't want to give a guy like that attention. You're like, these guys would be good dads. But he, like, she, like, followed them across the bar and was, like, insulting their wives. And finally, like, finally it came to blows.
Wait, so we don't know what the origin of the bar fight was. It's just Scott Stapp being a drunk
asshole. I think it's
asshole,
just him being
and he
asshole,
saw
yeah.
another famous band
yes.
and was like, there's only room for one of these 90s bands.
I'll try to find this out. What I really don't understand is why they were both in Baltimore. Like, are they on the same tour together? Or is it just, like, a sheer coincidence that they both, like, you walk into a bar in Baltimore and you're like, ah, 311's here. Or are you like on the Lollapalooza tour?
If they were on tour together, then the fight would have happened on the bus.
One of the 311 guys broke his hand, man. You don't want to break a hand when you're in a rock band, that's for
on
sure.
his steel jaw trying to punch back. That's what he got.
That's his money making hand.
Wait, so, okay, we've gotten to all these sudden nuggets that you're dropping. What other crazy Scott Stapp history are you holding back on?
I mean, so we're in 2004 when the 311 fight happens, and so I just want to say, had he changed and become a better man, were his arms wide open?
Can't when find he was, a better man.
When
That's
he was,
a Pearl Jam song.
When he was sucker punching 311 after insulting their wives.
I mean, you know, like all art, we either you put yourself into it or you don't put someone else into it. But when you put yourself into it, it's a lie of yourself, right? It's either your best self or your worst self, mm-hmm. right? So he puts his best self that he either thinks of himself as a hero and a great person or the person that he wishes he was, and all of his fears and insecurities are based on that. So when he see, oh, my camera just died, but okay. when he sees another band who maybe is starting to get more famous than them, he has this idea of himself in his head, and he's like, ah, your wives are ugly, and I hate you. Fight me. Because he has no other way to handle that situation, because he would have to look inward to do anything else.
This episode is going purely Jungian, and I'm here for it.
I like this. We got a little ramp up. Charge and turn it back on.
Unleashing the Flames guitar a little bit.
I'm here for this guitar solo, man.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but if all of the other guitars weren't Flames, I'd be okay with that guitar solo. Kind of like this one guitar solo.
Just give you a little taste.
Life and hold it by them.
We just heard the saddest part of the song. If I had one wish, only one demand, I hope he's not like me.
Oh man, that's a little too real.
Welcome to this place. I'll show you everything. With arms wide open. Now everything has changed. I'll show you.
Falling action here. This song is very cinematic. Okay? I feel like it's very much going like the song about the rising action and the falling action. Oh, yeah.
I love that. Yeah, that was a great yeah.
Oh yeah.
You know who ends on a four chord like that? all the time, 100% of the time? Christian rock bands. Yep. That's the smoking gun right there. Okay, Andrew, I think we have 4 or 5 really strong ideas here. I don't know what we're going to do, but usually Andrew and I go and talk about it and fight each other, and whoever wins gets to do the punch-up. We're back, battered, bruised, and filled with regrets. One regret I have is that we just slid right into the episode taking for granted that we were interviewing an old friend of ours without giving our guest a proper introduction. Our guest this week is and has been Mark Fishbach.
He's known as Markiplier. I consider him to be one of the kings, at least one of the dukes of YouTube. He just has an amazing YouTube channel. He just put out an amazing, what do you even call it, Mark? A video, a movie this week called In Space with Markiplier?
I don't know. We've kind of been calling it an interactive series, a choosy thing. It's fun. So yeah. Try it, I guess.
It's amazing. It's a feature-length, interactive, choosy thing.
And it looks as good as a movie you would see in a theater. It looks remarkable. The special effects are so rad, Mark.
It's so awesome, man. Congrats.
Oh, thank you, and thank you guys for helping out with the music on it. If you guys watching at home or going to watch it after this, these lovely people on the other side of the screen here did a lot of the music, and if you recognized Space Is So Cool from a remix they did way back in the day, maybe like 5 and a half years ago now?
Yeah.
You'll hear that a lot in the show, and it's just like another little sprinkle of cool.
That's the first project we worked on together was our remix of Space Is Cool,
that was...
I think.
Wow.
And I love that one. That is one of my favorite remixes we've done on YouTube is the Space Is Cool we did for your channel.
Yeah. Well, I can't thank you enough for that, and I can't thank you for all the time you put into this one, too.
It was a blast.
Dream gig.
Yeah.
Mark, usually this takes us a lot longer to do, but I think because of your focus and your wisdom... It's been like a week, 6 days.
Yeah, it's only been a few days since we talked last time. Yeah. We banged it right out.
I think that if your 33 million subscribers ever disappeared off the face of the earth, you could be a therapist, Mark.
Wow.
Because you got to the bottom of Scott Stapp's emotions so directly and deeply that it made it so obvious to me how we had to punch this song up.
Mm-hmm.
I think,
you know, what we discovered together talking about this is that Scott Stapp felt like he's writing this song for a kid,
He thought he was writing it for his kid.
But really, who was he writing it for? Scott Stapp.
Yeah, you're not screaming, with arms wide open, into your kid's crib. You're going to wake him up.
Well, he's trying to psych himself up to be a better man. So what we're trying to do with this punch-up, and you can be the judge of it, is what if Scott Stapp had written the song for a kid?
Yeah, just try to revert back into that tiny little 8 or 11 year old Markiplier on the bus. Think about how it would feel if this song came over those janky speakers.
Here you go.
All right, I'm ready.
Well, I just heard the news today. You can show your love in a special way. Take your arms, open them up wide. Grab a friend, there's a hug inside.
It's a hug!
With arms wide open.
That's what you do with your arms.
With arms wide open.
Oh my God.
I'm hoping that you'll see I'm not the broken man I used to be. I'm happy. Well, I don't know if I'm ready to be the man I have to be. A hug makes me feel so happy that you're my baby and I'm your daddy.
That will surprise you.
With arms wide open.
With arms wide open.
With arms wide open.
Wide open.
Got rid of my aggression just like fighting 311. Hugging is heaven.
Oh my God. Wow.
You said pedal steel. And we made it.
Oh,
happen.
And there it is.
This is Eddie. We actually got Eddie. This is Eddie from SpongeBob.
We snuck in the pedal steel solo.
From SpongeBob.
Just works.
At the top of my wish list, it's number 1. is lots of hugs from you, my son. And my wish for you is to know what fun it is to show your friends how much you love them. With arms wide open.
With arms wide open.
With arms wide open.
With arms wide open.
What I did with Kid Rock should simply be forgot. Open your arms and hug a lot.
Forget Kid Rock.
2, 3, 4. With arms wide open, hug a lot. With arms wide open, hug a lot.
Get the kids on the feet.
I am not a man still broken. With arms wide open, hug a lot. With arms wide open, hug a lot. With arms wide open, oh, I'm hoping. I am not a man still broken.
Wow. You know what's so crazy about it is not only did you capture the essence of the message, it still trips your spider sense of like, is this a religious song? So it's right in the same area.
Is this being played at like children's church?
Yeah, that could you could speak that in a Christmas pageant for sure.
Yeah. Oh my God, that was not what I was expecting, but it's so much better.
You did not expect With Arms Wide Open to be a song about the best thing you can do with arms wide open, which is hug your friend. Just
exactly.
Hugs.
Yeah. Yeah. Or throw haymakers, you know.
Just at the entire band 311.
Yeah. Wow. That I have no words. You said all I could ever say and better.
That's what you want to do with the song. Say what you can't say with words.
Mm-hmm. Mm,
good point. No, I think it's pretty crucial, like, to imagine little Mark listening to this on the bus. If 11-year-old Mark is hearing it, he's probably too old, too cool for this song.
No, Mark... I was not cool until I was like 26, so I think I was still in the uncool phase.
Okay, so you'd like it. Maybe the older kids on the bus would peer pressure you into pretending you didn't like it. But in your soft sweetheart, you'd still be thinking,
no. I see the whole bus
nice.
Like it just starts bouncing as all the kids are like with arms wide open. I think it's gonna be a hit, man.
Thanks, man. Yeah, the main goal was make this a kids' song. Secondary goal: sneak in pedal steel solo, like you suggested. And third goal was Scott Stapp needs to apologize for all the stuff he did, like fighting for love.
Yeah, Scott Stapp could not get away, even in this song, which is about hugging.
Wow.
Away from admitting that he fought 311 and all the stuff he did with Kid Rock.
Man, nothing fixes problems like a good apology, and there's no better apology than an apology in a song. So I think this is wonderful. Well done.
The nice thing about it being about hugs is that even an infant can appreciate a hug, I think.
Mm-hmm.
A one-week-old.
That's the main thing they want in life. Yeah, milk and hugs.
How old does your kid have to be before he understands the sentiment of the original Arms Wide Open song that your dad tried to change into being a different person before you were born? Maybe 12, maybe 18, maybe when you yourself are having a kid. But as a one-week-old, you can appreciate your dad hugging you.
Amen.
Oh, yeah. Well, man, you guys have outdone yourself.
Thank you.
Incredible.
Thank you for your generosity. I'm going to send this off to Raffy right now, see if I can get it on the greatest hits.
This week, I'm sad to say the podcast is ending, but we're still going to leave you with our walk-in music every week.
Wait, are you saying our show is ending?
Well, just this episode.
Oh, the episode.
Just this episode. Oh, the episode. Don't worry, guys.
Oh, I thought that's how I was finding out.
Ending.
I was fired.
Honestly, this would have been a great way to go, but we're not done with punching up the jam yet. But every week we end the show with a segment called Walk-In Music.
What is your walk-in in music?
What song would you play while you're walking into an event of your choosing? Mm-hmm. Fictional, historical, non-fictional, whatever you want. I mean, I'm going to go deeply fictional here, and I'm going to say
hit us with it.
I'm really good at skateboarding in this scenario.
Uh-huh.
So this is extremely fictional.
Yeah, I was going to say it was like an X Games scenario, but that's like kind of 90s dated.
That's perfect for this
episode.
It's
perfect for this episode.
You're doing X Games. You're probably listening to Creed.
And it's perfect because I picked a 90s rock song. I was
All the snowboarders are listening to Can You Take Me Higher?
And I was so tired of listening to Creed that I was like, what is a 90s song that I love? So just imagine I've got my skateboard under my arm. I'm wearing helmets, knee pads, elbow pads because I'm a responsible skateboarder. And as I walk up to the top of the half pipe, you hear... There's suspense building. Wow. What trick is this guy going to pull off? Ooh, that guitar is not flanged, that's for sure. That's just screeching through an amp, buddy. And then right when I drop into the pipe, you hear the beat drop. Oh!
Woo!
The cowbell. This is Silence Kid by Pavement. Just, I think, one of the best album openers of all time. Off their album, Crooked Rain, Crooked Rain. I love this. I will say the vocals. I picked this song and then I was like, did I pick this because the vocals are basically the exact opposite of how Scott Stapp sings?
This song rocks, man. And it's really grungy, but it also has this very independent feel. Like, this is not on the top 40 radio. They're just messing around the first minute of this song. Like, they didn't polish that up.
Yeah. But this guy, 100%, is, like, ready to just crack off some 960s while he's listening to this song. Just sounds like an absolute dweeb singing the song in just the sweetest, cutest way. They kind of became a cult band, Pavement.
Yeah.
And you and I went and saw them in Central Park in 2011, 2012, Evan. Mm-hmm. And the band Weezer had flown into Central Park just to watch them. They weren't playing with Pavement. Just everyone was so excited Pavement had reunited that Weezer was in the VIP section.
Yeah, that's true story. This was a reunion tour that we saw Pavement on, and Weezer is sitting off to the side just like watching Pavement
play. And the look on their face, they were just so happy to see Pavement playing. They've kind of become a cult band that like had that huge reunion.
That's a great pick, man. Good 90s song that draws a sharp contrast to the polished radio ready Creed. Maybe not so polished offstage. Okay, my walk-in song was inspired by the presence of our guest Markiplier, who right now has a feature-length YouTube original out called In Space with Markiplier. And I was thinking about, imagine a hero, like in the movie Deep Impact or Interstellar or something, where you have to sacrifice yourself to save the entire human race.
Okay.
And it's sort of like, you know, real teenage fantasy, like, well, if I have to go, like at least I would save all of humanity doing it. I got to drive my spaceship to the comet. Okay. And blow it up, but I'll die doing it. So in my scenario, I'm saving the entire human race, but my rocket ship is flying straight into the sun.
Wow.
And so I wanted to choose a space song in honor of Mark being here this week. This song is from a 70s band called Prism. And the song is Spaceship Superstar. And I'm just going to play the last chorus. This is right as I drive right into the corona of the sun and I begin to melt and possibly go into nuclear fission in my own body.
I'm a spaceship superstar.
And I have a question.
Straight into the sun.
While you're walking into the sun, flying into the sun,
flying
in. Is this what you're listening to in headphones, or is like the president of the world
straight
to the camera on your spaceship flying
this
to the sun?
This is part of the broadcast. Yeah. Everyone gives me a salute.
And you were like, well, if I'm going to sacrifice my life to...
And then I stand up and I face the camera and I start ripping off a guitar solo.
No.
As I'm melting, the skin is coming off of my bones. The shuttle is... The seams are breaking. The heat-proof ceramic tiles that coat the shuttle are disintegrating. And I'm just tearing off this guitar solo. Modulating as it gets harder. As it gets hotter, I take the key up.
Is that the heat of the sun that caused the modulation, or you your hands are moving up the keyboard? Whoa. There it is again. The crowbar.
I cranked it up.
Every citizen of Earth is just standing and saluting you.
And crying. Everyone's crying. All of humanity, all 8 billion residents of planet Earth are crying. And the sun is welcoming me with arms wide open.
And why did you need to fly into the sun again?
His spaceship is going to turn it off and then turn it back on. And that's going to fix
right.
The sun.
I'm toting a huge nuclear warhead that's going to reboot the sun and delete the cookies.
Whenever you have a problem with your sun, you just turn it off and turn it back on.
And delete the cookies. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. That was great.
So what's your walk-in scenario, Mark?
The year is 2050. I've been at YouTube for a long, long time.
longer than most. But my star is starting to fade. My time in the light is coming to an end. But I'm greedy. I have a little more time. So I call up an old friend of mine, Ethan. And I tell him, look, I know your channel's been dead for a long time. Long, long time. Long time your career ended long, long ago. Mine thrived. Yours is dead. Why don't we box? And he says, yes. We schedule the event. Our bones may be old, but we're still strong at heart. At opposite ends of the ring, in a stadium that is very, God, I hope it's sold out, maybe like three quarters, we both start walking towards each other, eyes kind of glazed over with rheumatoid arthritis, which is somehow affecting our eyes, strutting out with whoever's playing guitar in the song, tied up like the guy from Mad Max playing the guitar as they're driving down the road. But, you know, we're real slow, so they're behind us. They're old, too. Just get the same actor. He'll be old enough. Anyway, we're up, approaching the ring. Everyone is confused. Who are these people? I recognize that voice from the song. Hey, isn't that Mark's friend from way back in the day? They don't know. Clamber in the ring. Slowly, our bones creaking with the weight of time. But our destiny lies in front of us. The bell rings. We charge. And in one fell punch, I knock Ethan's head clean off. Joke's on you. My career went on long enough to get rejuvenation treatment. My muscles are tight like bound tigers. He's dead in one hit. Broadcast across the solar system because I hope we're multiplanetary by then. And then people know the name of Markiplier. And I'll play Five Nights at Freddy's 65 when it comes out that August. I'm back, baby. Baby, I'm back.
He's back, baby. It was a walk-in song, it was a soundtrack, and it was a snuff film.
Yeah, all in one.
Wow, Mark. I can't believe you came up with that whole beautiful walk-in scenario in just 15 minutes.
That's what retiring YouTubers do. They go to pay-per-view boxing. That was a great pick, man, but what do we call this song? This song is called Yes by Misanthrope.
I have no idea, actually. All I know it is from the credits of Homeworld. That's it. I think in the description of that video you found John Anderson lead vocals. I think just Yes. Yes, Homeworld. Yes, Homeworld.
The song is Homeworld by Yes.
The Great Proggies.
The Great Proggies. The Great Progressive Rock Band.
One of our mom's favorite bands. Yes.
Oh. Well, there you go.
I mean, I like to think, when I think of the word Homeworld, Mark, that like days after this event, when everyone thinks that like the virality of you knocking a man's head off in the ring has finally settled down, that's when the aliens land and are like, we see you have a great champion. We invite you, Earth, to enter the Battle of Galactic Champions.
Oh, good.
That's the make-or-break moment, whether we can enter into like the Galactic Federation, is whether you can knock an alien's head off, maybe in like a tournament of 16 champions.
Oh, so I got to knock 15 other people's heads off?
Yeah,
but
the
heads
aliens
off?
Don't understand the concept of age or rheumatoid arthritis. They don't understand that like you're an over-the-hill YouTuber that just did this. They think you're Earth's greatest champion because they paid for the pay-per-view. Yeah.
Oh, good, good, good.
And we're counting on you to represent our species.
Thank you. I always dreamed of this.
Mark, thank you so much for doing Punch Up the Jam with us. The pleasure was all ours, and I think I can say I'm leaving with my arms wide open, my heart wide open, my mind wide open, and I would just exhort our fans to go check out In Space with Markiplier. It's a true achievement. Congratulations.
Yeah, and if I could say something for everyone listening to this, you guys have no idea how much work these guys have put into the show. By the time this comes out, I believe it'll be out, you will have heard the music in the show. Like, obviously they couldn't score everything because the show's just too damn big, but they put in so much more work than I ever could have hoped for in transforming the theme of Space Is So Cool across the show. I owe them so much to the feel of the show and all that. It's beautiful, and I am eternally grateful, and I owe you guys a huge favor down the road for doing that.
This was
Thank
it.
You so much.
This was the favor, man, coming on the podcast.
No.
Well,
no,
okay,
no,
okay. We'll think of a second favor.
We'll think of a second favor.
Yeah, think of like some cool music tech you've always wanted, or like anything at all.
Honestly,
I will get you a gift.
I want front row seats at the boxing match.
Yeah, we write songs for your movie, and you give us front row seats at your boxing match.
You know what?
You
not at the
it.
First
the
boxing match. I want front row seats at the alien boxing match.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. I'll give you buckets so you can catch the heads.
That sounds like something from Mad Max. Like, get me my bucket boys.
Get me my bucket boys.
Where's
and my
the
blood
bucket boys.
Get the guy on the hood of the car and the little boy with the bucket. Get jailbait, my bucket boy.
And the milk women. That's what we call the cold close.
Wow.
Let's punch it.
That was a HeadGum Original.